Hi, I'm Marty Krizwanis, and I'll be hosting the next episode of Over My Dead Body, the only talk show that brings to life the most influential and compelling people of our history and culture. We'll travel to the heart of Silicon Valley for a rare interview with the co-founder of Apple Computers, Steve Jobs. I'll bet you guys think you know everything about him. Think again.
Which of these famous actresses do you think I slept with?
I'll pick door number one.
Let's try all of them.
All of them it is. Over My Dead Body with Steve Jobs, coming up. Hello, I'm Marty Krizwanis, and this is Over My Dead Body, the only talk show that brings to life the most influential and compelling people of our history and culture. Today, we've traveled to Palo Alto, California, the heart of Silicon Valley, more specifically, Alta Mesa Memorial Park, where our guest, Apple co-founder and computer pioneer Steve Jobs, has taken up residence. Come on, let's go say hello. As you all know, Steve Jobs invented the Macintosh personal computer, the iPod, the iPad, the iPhone, and a whole bunch of neat stuff like that.
I also founded Pixar.
Yes, you did. Welcome to Over My Dead Body, Mr. Jobs.
Call me Steve.
Okay, Steve. First of all, I want to thank you for coming on our show. I realize you're a very busy man and that this is the first interview you've agreed to do since your death in 2011.
You're quite welcome, Marty. I'm guessing most of the people watching this show are doing it on an iPhone or an iPad.
No doubt. Mr. Jobs, Steve, would you mind telling our viewers a little about your background?
Not at all. In 1955, I was placed for adoption. Thank God. Because my real father was a Syrian dude named Abdul Fattah Jandali. Try spelling that for the gym teacher. Anyway, my dad, the Muslim, figured my mom's family from the Midwest would never accept him. Like, no shit, Sherlock. So I got placed for adoption. And fortunately, a white couple in San Francisco ended up with my introverted nerdy ass.
And how did that work out?
Middle class all the way. I was a precocious little shit like the rest of the kids in my neighborhood.
At what point did you get the desire to invent things?
When I was 12, I wanted to build a frequency counter but didn't have the parts. So I found William Hewlett in the Palo Alto phone book and dialed his number. He actually answered. Not only did he give me the parts I needed, but he offered me a summer job at HP. I was in heaven. Although looking back on the experience, I think the guy just wanted to molest me.
My understanding is that your adoptive dad, Paul, was a repo man.
That's why I never liked having license plates on my car. There's a law in California where you don't need license plates for the first 6 months. So every 6 months, I'd get a new Mercedes.
And your mom, Clara, was too frightened to love you for the first 6 months of your life for fear of losing you.
As a result, I'm still a breast man. Actually, she was afraid my real parents would change their mind and file a lawsuit to get me back.
I also read that your mom wanted to return you at age two.
She flip-flopped. First she feared losing me, then she feared keeping me. I think she just wanted an upgrade.
Is that why you became a loner?
Well, duh. I didn't bathe. Plus, I hated people. Still do. I basically wanted to create a bunch of products and connect the world so everybody would leave me the hell alone.
What was the best thing that ever happened to you?
Meeting Steve Wozniak in high school. I was 13 when we met. He was 18. Love that guy. Although he may feel differently about me, I made him my biatch.
Was he your best friend?
Steve and Chris Ann Brennan, who I screwed on and off for years, and we had a daughter together. They were my only friends at Homestead High.
According to Time Magazine, you started Apple with only $1,350.
Correct. I sold my VW microbus for $850, and Woz sold his HP calculator for $500.
And rumor has it that you never learned to code.
Who has time for all that? That's what Chinese people are for.
What exactly was your role in the creation of Apple?
Simple, Marty. I'm a facilitator. I assemble a group of people, tell them what to do, and then take credit for it.
Example.
In 1973, Woz designed his own scaled-down version of the Pong video game called Breakout. I showed it to Atari, told them I invented it, and they gave me a job.
Did you tell your friend what you did?
Hell no. As a matter of fact, they offered me $50 for every chip that I could eliminate without affecting the performance. I told Woz, he worked his ass off for 4 days and eliminated 100 chips, so Atari gave me $5,000. Then I told Woz they only paid me $1,500, and I gave him $750.
And just so our audience is clear on the subject, is it true that you never finished college?
I attended Reed College for one semester and audited classes for 18 months after that, but I never got a degree. However, I didn't jump into the computer thing right away.
What did you do?
In 1974, I traveled to India and stayed there for 7 months.
Why India?
I thought it was the thing to do. My old buddy Daniel Kotke and I traveled 8,000 miles to get some enlightenment and meet this jerk-off guru. When we got there, it turned out he died the year before. So I shaved my head and came home and told everybody that we met and became close friends.
You came home with a shaved head?
Yep. That's when everybody really started taking me seriously.
And you were up and running.
More or less. Even though we were working out of a garage, we needed to raise money to keep afloat. So Woz and I, okay, Woz, made a cheap digital blue box, which was a device used to make free phone calls. And we, okay, I, sold them illegally. We were able to make enough money to keep our little company, Apple, going.
By stealing from the phone company, you saved Apple?
Ironic, huh? Since 30 years later, we completely did them out of business. Who doesn't like stealing from the phone company?
So, in 1975...
In 1975, I was 20, and Wozniak was 25. We set up shop in my parents' garage, which is where Woz invented the first Apple I computer. We built it from a typewriter, a cassette recorder, and a black and white TV. Everybody thought we were nuts.
And the rest is history.
Only a year before, I was sleeping on a friend's floor and returning Coke bottles for money and getting free meals from the Hare Krishna temple.
According to Forbes, you were worth $1 million at 23, $10 million at 24, and over $100 million at 25.
I could now afford deodorant. You know, when I worked at Atari, they made me come in at night because I walked around barefoot and stunk.
You became a father rather early on, is that right?
Yes. In 1977, Chris-Ann got pregnant when Apple was in full swing.
And according to what I read, Chris-Ann went on welfare and cleaned houses to support your child, Lisa, who was born in 1978.
I kept her pregnant and working in someone else's kitchen.
And you had close to $400 million at that time.
The press tried to portray me as a deadbeat dad. It was only $100 million.
So when Time magazine learned about this, they decided not to name you Man of the Year and instead gave the award to a personal computer itself.
That sucked, I'll admit. Even worse than getting cancer. But I did pay child support after we went public. I gave Chris-Ann $385 a month so she no longer had to clean houses. She became a waitress.
Steve, didn't you think that was just plain wrong?
Denying paternity was kind of slimy, but I did take my daughter to Whole Foods, and not too many people can afford to shop there. Even Bill Gates doesn't go there. In fact, the only person who can afford to go to Whole Foods is Jeff Bezos.
So you did see your daughter?
Yes, and I taught her things of importance, like parking in handicapped spaces without guilt. I've done it for years. Also on Halloween, we had the scariest house in Silicon Valley. Lisa helped decorate it. Every year I'd wear the same costume. I dressed as Wozniak.
Steve, we have Kim Senis, a ninth grader from Henderson, Nevada, on the line.
Mr. Johns, I'm writing a school paper on driverless cars. Do you think they'll ever catch on, and will they really work?
Good question, Kim. But think about it for a minute. We pretty much have them already. Since people text the whole time they're driving, the car essentially has no driver.
Diane Cooper, a high school teacher from Mattawan, New Jersey. Say hello to Steve Jobs.
Hi, Mr. Jobs. First of all, thank you so much for inventing the iPhone. I really love it. My question is, I was wondering if you smoke pot like me.
Diane, I used to love pot. I called it turkey and sour diesel was my favorite. The iPhone was designed for potheads like yourself, so thanks for calling.
Steve, I read that you got stoned for the first time in 1970, and it was then that you discovered Bob Dylan, Moby Dick, Ernest Hemingway, and Shakespeare.
My favorite play is King Lear.
You told Newsweek that taking LSD was one of the two or three most important things you ever did in your life.
It was number three. Getting blown by Joan Baez was number one. The flashbacks were number two.
Were you on LSD when you played the Mad Hatter in Alice in Wonderland?
You really did your homework.
Wozniak played the White Rabbit, and Chris Ann was Alice.
We were all on acid, just like the author.
In 1985, only 9 years after founding Apple, you got fired from your own company. When you returned 12 years later, they were at the bottom of the barrel.
It was a disaster. And turning the company around wasn't easy.
Some former employees claimed they were afraid to ride in an elevator with you at that time, fearing that they might not have a job when the doors opened.
I thought it was the ideal place to give people the shaft. Sorry, I had to say it.
By 2008, Apple was the most valuable company in the world. At the same time, a class action suit was filed against you and other members of Apple's board of directors for securities fraud.
Yepers. We stole more money than Bernie Madoff by backdating stock transactions. Not bad for a guy with a GPA of 2.65.
Michael Klatskin from Naples, Florida, you have Steve Jobs on the line.
Mr. Jobs, what's up, Michael?
Two things. First, how can you live with yourself hiring all those Asian kids? And second, how is sex with Diane Keaton?
If you're referring to child labor, Michael, I'm a big believer in giving kids a leg up. Bill Hewlett gave me a summer job at HP when I was 12, and I spent all day putting screws in frequency counters. And look where I am now. Well, not exactly now.
You've got a twisted mind, pal.
As for Diane Keaton, I was surprised at how tight she was, considering Warren Beatty, Al Pacino, and even Woody Allen had spent time in it. All she did was lay there and talk like Annie Hall. Now, Joan Baez was another story. She rode me like a racehorse. Not bad for an anorexic computer nerd, eh?
You're a piece of work.
Steve, Ashton Kutcher and Michael Fassbender both portrayed you on the big screen. Who did a better job?
Michael Fassbender was by far the superior actor. But I prefer Ashton Kutcher because he got to sleep with Demi Moore and Mila Kunis.
In October of 2003, after making Apple the most successful company on the planet, you were diagnosed with a rare type of pancreatic cancer.
Unfortunate, but true.
According to the chief surgeon at Sloan Kettering in New York, by neglecting immediate treatment, you essentially committed suicide.
Yes, I fucked up big time. I had the only type of pancreatic cancer that's treatable. All I needed was a fairly simple surgery called the Whipple procedure, but...
You thought different?
I walk my talk. So I went to Mexico for an herbal bowel cleansing. The people there sedated me and stuck a cactus mint douche up my Silicon Valley ass. When I woke up, I couldn't remember a thing. Except that the Cosby Show was on in the background.
Did you ever have the Whipple procedure?
Eventually, but by then the cancer had spread to my liver.
In 2009, you underwent a liver transplant at Memphis Methodist University Hospital.
During the donor screening process, I learned that I had the same rare blood type as Tim Cook.
Your CEO?
Apparently, you can remove a portion of a liver and it'll regenerate. So Tim offered me a portion of his liver.
And you turned it down?
I played it off by saying, "Does it come with fava beans and a good Chianti?" But seriously, I didn't want a liver that had so much semen pass through it. I'm funny that way.
After you died, Tim Cook announced to the world that he was gay.
Like it was such a big secret. Once you swallow a dick, word gets around fast.
Yum yum.
Exactly.
So you resigned on August 24th, 2011, and died at home on October 5th. According to your official biographer, Walter Isaacson, your final words were, "Oh wow, oh wow, oh wow."
I had it arranged that at the exact moment of my death, my wife would yank a daisy chain out of my ass like she was starting a lawnmower. I came and went at the same time.
Were you really worth $8.3 billion at the time of your death?
I'm definitely the richest man in the cemetery. Just look around you. My neighbors are David Packard, Shirley Temple, Tennessee Ernie Ford. Even the guy who invented the transistor is here. Talk about networking.
At least you have intelligent neighbors. Are you aware that after you died, Apple, Microsoft, and Disney all flew their flags at half-staff?
It was my idea.
Was it also your idea to give each guest at your funeral a small brown box which contained the autobiography of a yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda?
You get serious points for being able to pronounce that motherfucker's name. Yes, it was my parting joke. I'm sure they all thought they were getting the new iPad. What a letdown.
I read not long ago that your wife, Lorene Powell Jobs, stops in from time to time at the Apple offices, and that she visits your office, which is not only still there, but was left in the same condition as it was when you worked there, including the nameplate on your desk. Is that right?
Yes, it is. You know, I missed only one business meeting in my entire life, and that was to go out to dinner with Lorene. I was giving a view from the top lecture at Stanford. She was sitting in the front row, and from that moment on, we were never apart.
That's true love.
Laureen was everything to me. We were married for 20 blissful years, and she held my hand when I died.
I thought she was yanking a daisy chain from your ass.
She was multitasking. Anyway, I wrote her a love letter for our 20th anniversary and gave it to her at the same hotel where we got married.
That's very sweet.
I remember it by heart. We didn't know much about each other 20 years ago. We were guided by our intuition. You swept me off my feet. Our love and respect has endured and grown. We've been through so much together, and here we are, older, wiser, and we're still here together. My feet have never returned to the ground.
That's beautiful.
Well, her feet haven't returned to the ground either. Turns out the love of my life was at a Houston education conference in 2011 and met this dude, Adrian Fenty, who was the mayor of Washington, D.C. Well, the guy's married, but little cocksucker that he is, he hits on my wife, and the next thing you know, he files for divorce from his own wife, and bada bing, bada boom.
They started seeing each other?
You ever look out into the ocean and see those oil platforms?
Sure.
My wife's getting drilled like that. And old Adrian has 8.3 billion reasons to keep that erection going strong.
I think it's up to 14 billion. She made some good investments.
Funny how life works.
One final caller. Charles Salmore from Santa Monica, California. What's on your mind?
Mr. Jobs, we all owe you so much gratitude. You made our world a better place to live.
That's very kind of you, sir.
Really? How you could have accomplished so much after being dumped by your real parents? I mean, in the 56 years you were on this earth, you co-founded Apple, Pixar, and obtained a mind-boggling 342 design patents. So my question has two parts. Are you still wearing the Issey Miyake black turtleneck you wore to the office every day?
And the New Balance sneakers. Don't forget them. Yes, I am.
And the second part of my question is this. Do you think what's happening right now as we speak has anything to do with karma and the way you abused everybody around you, including your daughter Lisa, her mother Chris Ann, and all the Apple employees, including your best friend Steve Wozniak? How you refer to PCs as dog shit and the people who buy them as losers? And how, on top of everything else, you have the nerve to pretend to be a Zen Buddhist?
What do you mean by saying what's happening right now as we speak?
I have a tech buddy who knows your wife Laureen and her boy toy Adrian. And I'm told that as one of the many, and I mean many, sex games they play, they both wear black turtlenecks and rip them off each other every day. Then Stud Muffin yells, "Think different," as he drills your widow, Mrs. Jobs, hard with his BBC. And I don't mean the British Broadcasting Corporation. What goes around comes around.
Oh, God.
And I love your stupid quotes. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. Stay hungry, stay foolish. The ones who are crazy enough to change the world are the ones who do. You piece of shit, asshole motherfucker.
It appears that Steve Jobs has gone into Zen mode. Michael S. Rosenwald of the Washington Post said, Jobs was charming, loathsome, lovable, obsessive, and maddening. I think this may all be true. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you again soon on the next episode of Over My Dead Body.
She took all my money!
We hope you enjoyed the third episode of Over My Dead Body. The entire TV series is now available as a podcast in addition to streaming on Amazon Prime. Aside from Steve Jobs, we've interviewed Robert Kardashian, Nostradamus, Mae West, Richard Nixon, and Julia Child. Upcoming guests include Walter Cronkite, Mark Twain, Howard Cosell, Sigmund Freud, Tupac Shakur, Jimmy Stewart, and Albert Einstein. All told, we plan to produce 60 episodes. and perhaps as many as 300 of them. One thing's for certain, there's no shortage of interesting guests, and more seem to arrive every day. The executive producers of this episode are Stephen Craig Ariste and me, Stephen Kunis. The show was produced and directed by the great Marty Krizwanis, a gifted artist and friend who I met in the fourth grade over half a century ago. Over My Dead Body was created and written by me, Stephen Kunis, and this episode was hosted by Marty Krizwanis. Steve Jobs was portrayed by Steve Clarkson, a young actor with a very bright future. The telephone callers were played by Cheyenne Donnell, Patricia Gales, Casey Shoemaker, and Shachna Kunis. Sound recording was provided by Casey Shoemaker, and the editing was done by Marty Krizwanis and Saeed Mohammed. The catchy theme music, both at the beginning and end of the show, was composed and performed by Marty Krizwanis. As you may have guessed, Marty is one talented guy. Very special thanks go to Norman Lear, my mentor and friend for almost 40 years, and to my old boss, Johnny Carson, for suggesting to me that a talk show with a fantasy wish list of guests would be a wonderful idea. Finally, the staff at PhillyCam in Philadelphia provided much-needed encouragement and expertise required to turn our TV series into a podcast, which will allow us to educate and entertain even more people.